ye, fa la 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 la. Follow me in merry measure, fa la 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 la. Sailing homeless gives me a pleasure, fa la 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 la. Now calm the chapter, no graffiti, fa la 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 la. No compassion for the needy, fa la 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 la.
That was more Carolyn after an inquiring visitor wants to know what was going on with this protest here.
Olin University in Tempe, Arizona. This is the third annual Homelessness March. By Free to Camp Coalition and Food Not Bombs. This is the corner of Millen University Avenue, which is the center of downtown Tempe, home of Arizona State University. It's beautiful, it's nice, it's 63 degrees, but homeless people are obviously not welcome in this area because they have passed many laws denying them the ability to be in this area.
What's the matter? Ready? Uh-huh. Is everybody ready for Jack the Hog?
Everybody's ready.
One, two, three.
Big dog with cornbread long nose, la 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 la. The dingy don't know where the cash lives, la 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 la. No homeless shelter, no graffiti, la 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 la. No compassion for the needy, la 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 la. See the homeless right before us, la 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 la. Compassion for the needy, la 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 la. Follow me in merry measure, la 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 la. Sharing homeless gives me pleasure, la 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 la. No homeless shelter, no graffiti, la 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 la. No compassion for the needy, la 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 la.
We are caroling and drinking vegan hot cocoa. It seems like a typical Christmas Eve, except for a few noticeable differences. This young lady is holding a sign which says in big red letters, Naughty! Mayor Giuliano, Tempe City Council, Theodore Clausen, William G. Waz, and Rod Keeley. What is your name?
Hi, my name is Serena Turley.
Yes, and why are you here?
I'm here because I think that Christmas is a really good time to get people thinking about giving, and we also think that the Christmas Story is a perfect metaphor for what's happening here in the city of Tempe. The poor are being pushed out and told that there is no room for them here, and so we're here to say that people need shelter, it's a human right, and Christmas is a really good time to get people thinking about that.
How far from here does somebody have to go who needs shelter?
They would have to go to Phoenix or they would have to go to Mesa because there's not a single overnight shelter in the city of Tempe, and yet it's illegal for them to sleep in public.
What do you mean it's illegal for them to sleep in public?
Well,
the urban camping ordinance criminalizes basically all the actions that surround sleep, such as laying down bedding or residing in a car or, you know, other similar things like preparing food. And so even though it doesn't say you can't fall asleep, basically it criminalizes all the circumstances of it.
And what is your name?
Elizabeth Venable.
Oh, this is excellent. I believe this is a good thing to do on Christmas Eve. This is highly appropriate. And the lady was right. This is a perfect metaphor for the Christmas story because there was so much no room for this homeless family that was traveling, a woman about to give birth. This story is played out every day on the streets of America and in the world.
Right. And yet we don't glorify it. Like, it's fairly hypocritical to reject the homeless and not offer enough shelter and then kind of glorify, you know, this story of poverty, too. So
there's a common misconception that the majority of people are homeless because they are mentally ill. How do you feel about that?
There are lots of situations that lead to homelessness, and mental illness is one of them. But a lot of things such as abuse can contribute to it. A lot of things such as a lot of kids who come out of the closet and get rejected by their families, end up on the streets, domestic violence, you know, a lot of things that are outside of people's control, including mental illness. So there are, like, many factors.
We're trying to refute the particular, I'm trying to refute the attitude that, oh, those people are just crazy or they wouldn't live like that.
No, I mean, the lack of treatment for mental illness is also a big factor. Like, the fact that there isn't good voluntary mental health programs or involuntary, there's no mental health. That really has been, but definitely not a majority of homeless people are mentally ill, but just a large minority.
Well, you know? Basically what we're saying here is it can happen to anybody under any circumstance.
Yeah, anybody under any circumstances, and because as a safety net gets thinner and thinner, more people will fall into
the classic one paycheck away from homelessness.
Yeah, exactly. And without support, and, you know, a shelter would be nice, but we also need, you know, more buffers and also just more compassion.
We're walking north on Mill Avenue.
I'm sure we have something going on. Oh. I didn't have this. That guy was in trouble.
And who are you?
Ed.
I'm Mary Kay.
Oh, how do you do?
And why are you here?
Well, because... Just because.
Just because.
If you have to ask, you wouldn't understand. It's something that comes from deep down in your life, and you just know that you have to do it.
Well, we've been there and done that. My boys that are with me right now, they remember. They remember clearly.
I've been homeless myself.
Yes.
And so they convinced me.
Yeah. Kind of like Louis Armstrong and the question, what is jazz? Well, if you have to ask, you'll never understand.
Exactly.
Thanks, Ed.
Exactly.
Again, for those who are wondering, this is a download of a demonstration that's either tonight, earlier tonight, or last night in Tempe, Arizona, where homeless people were protesting at the mayor's house the lack of homeless services and the criminalization of the homeless in terms of the sleeping ban. Sound familiar? That, to some extent, was what a smaller group of us were doing here in Santa Cruz. I guess it was Monday when the Homeless Service Center did its reading of the names of the homeless dead. Let's hear a little more. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you want to call in on this Christmas night, 427-3772.
This is the Arizona Radio Indy Media Center in Phoenix, Arizona, the progressive and liberal capital of the Southwest. in the United States of America, where George Bush is ruining the economy, covering the news that the corporate news does not cover. This is Christmas Eve night in Tempe, Arizona, in the United States of America, covering the third in a series of homelessness protesters. They will be caroling in downtown Tempe and will be proceeding in front of the mayor's house, spreading some Christmas cheer. They say if baby Jesus was born in Tempe, Mary would have been arrested. They are protesting the urban camping ordinance that makes it illegal to be homeless in Tempe, Arizona.
It is a crime to sleep, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum, or to lay down bedding, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. Prepare some food to eat, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum, rum-pa-pum-pum, rum-pa-pum-pum. You should listen up, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum, when we come. These laws are truly mean, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. We need a place to sleep, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. We need a shelter, please, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. Defend us, defend us, rum-pa-pum-pum, rum-pa-pum-pum, rum-pa-pum-pum. What if you were poor, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum? Would you care? You should stop it, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum.
Yeah, and I think you all get the idea what's going on in Tempe. It sounds a little monotonous, but then again, so is being outside in the cold on nights like this and having to hide from the police. I was walking down Pacific Avenue en route to the studio today, about an hour ago, and saw a guy actually sleeping in front of Palace Arts Stationery, covered up by a blanket. And the weather out there, if you stick your head outdoors, you'll find is getting pretty cold. I guess we should all be grateful the police haven't wrapped him up and hustled him away somewhere else. Not sure exactly why he was sleeping downtown in a public place. Maybe he felt it was safer. Didn't bother to wake him up and ask him. Anyway, Free Radio Santa Cruz, what you're listening to, 96.3 FM here and 101.1 FM if you're catching our booster or, I guess, repeater or whatever it is, an additional broadcaster that helps us get past the wall of Christian fog and gobbledygook that hits us, hits the listener at 96.3 in Southern County. You're also possibly listening to us at www.freakradio.org on the net. That's where we go out, and you can call us anywhere in the world, or from anywhere in the world, if you got the money and the phone, at 831-427-3772, or email me at rnorth2@hotmail.com. What I'm going to turn to now, kind of waiting for the call-in from Roger Herrick of the Homeless Coalition up in Arcata, is a little local street interviewing. Let's catch some of that.
It is about 20 to 2 on December 21st, and we're out here, what, I guess it's near the Catalyst, talking with
Rachel Myers.
And Rachel, you have some pretty salty words for those who have been, should we say,
salty like an HIV test, you motherfuckers out there.
Your response to those who are not giving you, should we say, donations?
Is that donations for being pregnant with Johnny Depp's baby, thanks a lot.
So you are pregnant?
With Vaughn. His name is Vaughn. Oh yeah, his real name is Vaughn, but he calls himself Vaughn.
Now, how old are you?
I'm 25 in January.
And how long have you been pregnant?
For 2.5 months, October 15th, Johnny Depp, Mr. Vaughn, got me pregnant, and nobody on these fucking streets gives me a penny, and they're all jealous of me, and they walk by and snicker.
And how many hours a day would you say you do this?
All day, every day.
Okay, and any comments about how the police are treating you?
No, actually, I support the police because I turned a man in for trying to rape me once, and he's gone, long gone. And there's a few other people I want to turn in also.
How long have you been in Santa Cruz?
I've been in Santa Cruz for 4 months, and I'm friends with the lieutenant of the police department.
And what about the folks downtown? Any sense about other?
Folks downtown are too yuppie and too wise-ass and too stuck-up.
How about the fellow panhandlers? Any comments on them?
The panhandlers are okay because they don't yell anything out to other people. They just sit there. So they're not really mocking anybody. They're not causing any strife or reaction from anybody else. They just sit there and collect money, so they're okay.
But you yourself are pretty outspoken. I mean, you know, you wouldn't it be honest to say that you castigate people who don't give you money?
Yeah, of course, because they notice who I am. They know that I'm pregnant, and they walk right by me like it's a fucking joke.
And we're talking about people who know you, or you think the people who should know you just based on the fact that how you... Because I couldn't tell you're pregnant, for example, by looking at you.
Right, right.
No.
But I'm pretty sure people can tell I'm pregnant by the way I'm acting. And I know that they deserve to give me a few dollars. Of course, a few $100 once in a while. But once this guy gave me $10 for a blowjob, but I never gave it to him. So he just gave me $10 for free. But if you know the type of, like... humor I have as a person, you'll understand what I mean by that. You know, it's like you gotta beg people for money out here on these streets because they're so stuck up and full of themselves and so selfish they spend all their money on themselves and never on their fellow friends.
Now, what about people who are poor compared with people who are rich? Do you find that they're more generous, less generous, any difference?
I think the people that are rich are more abusive to the people who aren't rich.
Anything else you want to say to our free radio audience?
Well, I hope you guys aren't offended by my slang. And I'm from New York, and I'm from the East Coast, and I've been all over the country and the world. So if you have anything to ask me, I can prove it to you that I've been everywhere, Ohio, going to France. And I just came over here from San Francisco, and I just got out of New York City like about a year ago. So, you know, I know the differences of people in society, and Santa Cruz people are very real. They're very real. That's the only word I have.
Even those who are snooty and full of themselves.
Yeah, they're real too, but they're
real snooty.
They're real snooty, but being real snooty is real fake.
We've been talking with...
the real Darcy.
Hey, Darcy, thank you very much.
Have a nice day.
And the same to you. I'm out here at the Homeless Service Center. It is December 22nd, Monday, and it's about 11:15 inside. The names of the dead have just been read. 39 dead this year. I'm talking with...
I'm Lee Brock. I'm one of the church monitors for the homeless. And I just read a newspaper article where we have come up with $66 million in funding for the homeless in the Bay Area, and let's make sure it's used the way it's supposed to be used, or let's put some people in jail.
What sort of uses would you suggest, Lee, do you think should be done?
It is for permanent housing, it is for job training, it's for mental health care, it's for health care, and it's for emergency shelters. Where are they? Where are all these programs? Who's responsible, and let's put his nose to where it's supposed to be.
Have you told Ken Cole about this?
No, but I'm sure Ken will read the article. Ken, I feel, does a very good job getting people into shelters in this county. Mm-hmm. But there's such a need for housing, there's such a need for the support staff, especially children. Most people my age, you know, are going to say, well, the hell with it, we can live out on the streets. But you're looking at future generations. And the president has a 10-year plan that there will be no homeless in the United States. So let's make sure the money is put to the use that it's intended to, not to buy fancy cars, jewelry, et cetera, et cetera.
But the military need bullets.
You know what? Then give us some tents and we'll survive.
It's illegal to camp in Santa Cruz, I'm sorry.
You know what? Jail costs them money.
I can say no more.
Just make sure on the radio that its message has gotten across, because I want the follow-through from the voters of California that this money is being used the way it's supposed to, and that's to house the homeless. You know, clothing, food, whatever it takes.
Thank you, Lee.
You're welcome. You put it on the radio for me.
Just as you said it. We're talking.
My name is Betty Hardy. I just want to say that The homeless people are human beings too, and I don't think they should be forgotten, even though they're dead. They had mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, sons and daughters, and I just want to send my prayers out to them all. My son was one of them.
Your son died this year?
October 31st, a drunk driver killed my son.
Thank you. We're talking with Mary Curry. Mary, you're in your 70s, are you not?
Yeah, I'm in my 70s.
And how long have you been on the street now?
Oh, 5 years.
And?
About that, yeah, 5 years.
And tonight, where are you going to be sleeping?
Oh, well, hopefully with the church group. But she's always complaining, the monitor. I can't lug all your stuff around. See, I need it. I need it for my back, you know, my blankets and things. And, well, she's always, that. I don't like to hear people cry about things like that. And then the Matt Van Man tells me I have too much stuff, I'm not going to bring it. He threatens me all the time.
So have you been able to be on the ISSP or at the Armory continuously, or have you been turned away?
Everybody goes to, all the women go to the Armory once a week.
So you haven't been turned away?
No.
Thank you. We're talking with?
Diana.
Diana, what you got to say?
It's just so sad, you know, so many people passed on. But I wanted to talk to you about something else.
On tape? Off tape. Go ahead, Diana.
Okay, it has to do with our new governor, supposedly elect. I'm frightened for the state of California. You know, he's already talking about cutting healthy families for children and in-home support for people who are terminally ill and dying. And you know, I don't know where it's going. I just really think that he should be impeached. That's my opinion.
The woman here who reads poetry every year, and you probably write a lot of poetry between times, we're talking with.
But this year is special because I lost my husband of 25 years, who introduced me to the homeless community for the last 25 years.
And we're talking with?
About Eddie Norman, known as Colt 45, and I wrote My Traveling Man. Born in the back seat of a 36 Chevrolet, he traveled following the crops. In his 20s, he hitchhiked to Hong Kong and the Eastern Seaboard. He hitchhiked to Alaska with a broken leg in his 30s and parts in between. By train, by car, by plane, and by foot, he went from homeless shelter to homeless shelter, never having housing for more than a few months. Now he has shelter, but at what price? The smell of disinfectant assaulted my hair follicles. I noticed the pungent, colorless, gaseous alkaline compound of ammonia. My nose hairs twitched like a cat's whiskers investigating a new place. The lingering smell of urine with just a whiff of feces mixed with the pine sol perfumed the halls. The facility looked modern and clean. I noticed the small flowers on the clean wallpaper, starkly contrasting to the withering flesh staring at me from watering eyes, eyes clouded over with cataracts and boredom. What would I find behind the room of room 23, bed 2? I hadn't seen him in years. I stopped walking down the long corridor leading to his room. I breathed deeply to regain my composure and found my mind fascinated with the cheery small rosebuds on the wallpaper. When I entered room 23, he was fitfully sleeping. I sat quietly in the corner of the room. Now he has housing, I thought, a roof over his head, rescued from the rain and cold by total incapacitation. He wanted to die in the North Woods, where the wolves and carrion would recycle his body. He never got there. His drive for survival too strong. In pain, he sought out the medical profession. He wanted to live. He woke with a smile of recognition in his dull blue eyes. The sparkle was missing. High on methadone, he couldn't remember exactly what was wrong with his body. High on methadone, he didn't feel the pain. Proudly, he told me he hadn't had a drink in 2 years, since he was admitted. Proudly, he told me he was on hospice care. I've got money, get me a car, so I won't die in this place. There wasn't time. He died that week, surrounded by fragile folk, not me. Now he has housing, he'd hate it. Now his ashes sit behind books on my bookcase. Someday I'll get the money. I'll get to the North Woods and scatter his ashes. The wolves won't eat him, but the bears, wolverine, birds, and insects will carry his body to parts unknown. Finally, then, he will again be the traveler he was in life. Thank you.
It's Mama Joy, also known as?
Joy McCorkle.
Hey, Joy. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We're talking to an activist who is at this memorial ceremony. What's your name, madam?
Francis.
Francis, you noted that actually there were two mayors, actually one mayor, the current mayor, Scott Kennedy, and ex-mayor Chris Crone at this ceremony with his two kids on his lap, as well as Sentinel reporter Dan White, who is deeply moved by the whole ceremony, but seems to be very energetically laughing now. But go ahead.
Well, those people were here, like you said, and showed that I saw very little emotion, particularly the present mayor, Mr. Kennedy, and he got up and left when it was sort of like over and said nothing to no one and exited. And
as he had done at the homeless community meeting about 2 weeks before.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, perhaps he knew when to get out.
Well, I don't know. I don't think that's the answer. But I do think he only comes because that's his thing that he picked up from what they have to participate in. They have to be on nonprofit organizations. Each one of them has to sit on one or two something.
I think as the mayor, he has to make a mandatory appearance, you know.
Well, it's interesting, though, that no one else that's on the city council showed up. But
according to Ken Cole, they're all very busy looking at the budget situation, and that's why Kennedy has had no official meetings with Homeless Service Center head Ken Cole, according to Ken, although he may have talked to him informally. I'm not sure what the story is.
No, I didn't think so. But if they're talking about money, then that's good, because I'm sure that this homeless situation is at the top of the list, if not there at the top, very near the top, budget-wise, to do something so that we don't have these people out here in the freezing cold. And
if the death rate increases, the problem decreases. Haven't you ever thought of it that way?
That could be, yes.
Of course, there are funeral expenses to consider.
Yes, there's
and
that.
And political costs.
Yes, there's that. And, yes, yeah, the health and the whole thing. So, yes.
But you've got to kind of bear up under this, because after all, it's inevitable with these drug-abused crazies, right?
Oh, well, yes, if you think about it that way, yes, what else can you do?
I mean, these fantasies about a homeless campground and the sleeping ban having anything to do with this situation, is it's just sheer fancy.
It's just a dream. It's just a dream.
It is a dream.
Just a fantasy.
I'm glad that our Sentinel focuses on more appropriate items, such as the ceremony, the pomp, the lit candles, and the sobs of the mourning people.
Very good. Very good.
And that was some interviews from the memorial deaths at the Homeless Resource Center. On the line with us now is Roger Herrick from Arcata, California. Hi, Roger. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, sometimes our phone line can't be heard, or sometimes it could be heard too much. So what's happening up Arcata? Is it as frosty up there tonight as it is down here?
Well, it's raining where we are. We're actually in McKinleyville, which is the next town north of Arcata.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here with Tad, and We're at my house. We just had Christmas dinner.
Well, that sounds pretty cozy. I hear that you and Tad and others have set up a homeless coalition office in downtown Arcata.
Yeah, that's true. We just moved in, I think it was last Thursday, and we still haven't got the computer up and running, but I mean the DSL. But yeah, we're real excited about it because it has street access for the first time. We have a window that we can post things in, and people can just walk in off the street. So
I understand you had your first victory with the old legal paper at the sheriff's office as you attempted to subpoena the officers who are making life difficult for poor and homeless people.
Yeah, gosh, I can't remember what I told you before, but I think it was on Monday we went in and attempted to file some subpoenas. Mm-hmm. And Tad actually did it. And
Tad is a homeless man who's been repeatedly harassed by police.
Exactly. So anyway, even though they have changed the rules a couple of times on us, this time we scrupulously followed their instructions and submitted it. And then they said they wouldn't accept our subpoenas, that they wanted a unnecessary and legally unnecessary form attached, which is the proof of service on even the copies. And so a long argument ensued and several supervisors, but they did not accept the subpoena. So we came back to the house and did some research on the internet on the judicial forms and state laws, and indeed we were right. So we went back the next day with another homeless guy named Royce, and he brought a video camera, and we started filming immediately while Tad was out at the window.
Did they object to your filming?
No, there were some comments made, and they seemed surprised and a little flustered, and someone left the window, and anyway, they ended up calling the police, and they had four officers there, three behind.
What, to protect them from the video camera?
I don't know what the problem was, but they had one inside and three behind Tad. But this time they accepted the subpoenas without question and filed them and stamped them. And
well, maybe it was because
there was no problem.
Maybe it was because we were on orange alert and they were afraid there were the anthrax covered subpoenas.
I hadn't thought of that.
Yes, you can't be too careful.
They could have been anthrax covered subpoenas.
So, Roger, you and Tad have been fighting the good fight here, there up in Arcata since, for at least a year now. When did you two get kind of hook up?
We first met when someone that I don't even know called me in at that time. This was in March, wasn't it? And said that I was at that time, and I still am, a member of the Independent Observers Group, and we go around and observe interactions between the police and various demonstrators.
Just the ACLU?
It was an outshoot of that, but now it's just an independent organization on its own. It was formed sort of by people in the ACLU and members of the County Human Rights Commission.
Concerned not so much with homeless, but with peace activists, or?
That was the initial, the primary thrust, but I was always more interested in observing the local police than I was the forest demonstrators. However, I did get heavily involved in that, but anyway.
So it wasn't just peace activists, it was actually environmental activists.
There was Pacific Lumber, which is, you know, a huge corporation that was taken over by Texans, and they started raping the forest to make a quick buck, as opposed to the company that they took over that had a sustainable yield policy and had been here for over 100 years and probably would have been here for another few hundred years. But at any rate, they just been devastating the countryside.
Well, jumping back to these subpoenas that you successfully served, I'm sorry to be jumping around, but I'm going to kind of do that because I'm going to try to do a little kind of focusing quick and dirty here. Why were you delivering subpoenas to the, was this the, this was the deputy's office, or?
Well, you have to file them first and have them stamped at the courthouse.
Right, no, I understand the process. I'm just wondering why call in these officers at all? I mean, you know, do you want their testimony? I mean, they're going to be probably hostile to you. Why would you want them in court in the first place?
Well, there's a good reason for that. It is because on almost all the time we fight these things, the majority of tickets are camping, and we don't want a dismissal because the officer doesn't show, which is what has happened when we don't subpoena them. We want to get a actual verdict of not guilty by virtue of the necessity defense. And so it's not, we don't want to just go in and win. We want to win because of a particular reason, and that is that, of course, people are camping, but they have an absolute necessity. There's no other option for them.
What kind of shelter have you got up there in Arcata?
None.
Or in Eugene, I mean Eugene, Eureka?
There's a shelter in Eureka. It's fairly small, but I guess in emergencies they open it up and let people sleep on the floor in the dining room. Why don't you ask Tad about that? Okay, he knows more about this than I do.
Sure, why
not? He's
put,
right here.
Put Tad on.
Hi, Robert.
Hey, Tad, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Say hello to all your fans.
Hey, Merry Christmas, Santa Cruz. Love you guys.
So, how many homeless would you estimate are in in Arcata, and how many in Eureka?
Well, you know, it's the same old question. We probably average about 300 all during the summer, and it drops down between somewhere between 100 and 200, depending on how wet and cold and everything.
We being Arcata?
Right.
And Eureka?
Eureka's got quite a few more. There's a, seems to be a, it's the county seat. There's a lot more resources and stuff, and so there's a lot more people that stay there permanent.
What's the population of the two cities?
Well, Arcata's about 20,000 people. I'm not sure. Eureka's a little larger than that.
Mm-hmm. And I guess what I was asking, Roger, you, of course, are the man. Roger, you're sort of, has been supportive of you, but you're the man who's been outside taking the heat and dealing with the cold and, you know, getting, I guess, trying to organize protests at city council and trying to fight tickets when they come and getting your property confiscated and then fighting back. Is that an accurate assessment? Or?
Yeah, it's I shouldn't get all the glory. There's several homeless people with me. I don't do this by myself, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, Roger is a great asset in that he gave us a little bit of authority. People listen to us a little more when they know that there's people behind us with contacts to ACLU lawyers and things like that.
Have lawyers actually volunteered their services to help you guys?
Well, they have, but they have always seemed to be too busy to
do
get
shit
into it. We need to really streamline it since they're such cut and dry cases.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like we could streamline the questioning and the whole process for the lawyers.
So the purpose of these subpoenas, I'm kind of jumping back to that, is to make the police department pay a certain cost because they have to understand that if they are going to make you and other homeless people appear in court for tickets, they too will be forced to appear. They can't just harass you, jail you. And I should ask, how frequently are people jailed for the tickets they issue? Do they usually issue a ticket and let you go, or do they issue a ticket and jail you?
Well, it really, really depends. We can never make any heads or tails out of what they're going to do next. They'll get really mean and take people to jail on infractions, just detain them. And then the next week they'll start writing them tickets for misdemeanors, for things they could jail them for. And, you know, there's never any rhyme or reason. Somebody, you know, one person will get a ticket. It won't get into the system for 3 months, but the next person will get the ticket the next day, and he'll have a warrant for his arrest, you know, 3 days after his appear date.
And what is the shelter capacity for Arcata? I understand it's zero.
Well, Arcata's got one right outside the city. It's a little one that just started up. It was run by the church, and it holds like 12 people.
So that's 12 out of 300?
Basically, it didn't run all summer, so the big crowds that were here in the summer got no shelter space. But in the winter, when we really need it, you know, There's, like I say, somewhere between 100 and 200 people, probably full-time in Arcata, and there's nothing. In fact, they're clear-cutting the fields. I'm sure they're doing it around Santa Cruz, beautifying everything by just lopping entire terrains down.
And eliminating those unsightly homeless people as well.
Well, exposing the homeless people that were hidden. They weren't unsightly because you couldn't tell they were there until they...
Yeah, but they, you know, when you see them downtown, they just they don't fit in, you know what I mean?
Well, that's a...
I mean, they haven't got pocketbooks, for one thing.
Yeah. I understand their point of view, but this doesn't make any sense because somebody's richer than every one of them. Every one of them's beneath somebody, and, you know, where do you draw the line? You certainly don't, you know, let people run people out of town because they're black or because they're gay or because they're Hispanic or because they're a woman or anything else. You know, it's the same thing. And economic and status discrimination is the same bigotry.
So there is no shelter, or say shelter for 12 in Arcata, 300 people. Do police acknowledge this fact generally and generally leave homeless people alone? Do they, like, ticket only on complaint or only when there is a, quote, problem? Or are they generally on the gun for homeless people?
Well, they have two police officers. They call them rangers. We call them camping cops. And their entire job is just to root out and ticket and harass campers. Anybody that's homeless in town is known to them by name. They run their names in the morning to find out if they have warrants. Go by the soup kitchen to see if they can spot the ones with warrants and haul them off to jail. I mean, that's their livelihood.
But don't you have some sort of Green Party mayor and formerly a Green Party administration there?
Yeah, well, Bob Ornelas is about as green as Mexican pot, man. You know, he has no human rights and green platform at all.
You do have an ally in the form of Dave Meserve, though, right?
Right. Dave Meserve is an ally, but he's a freshman city council member with really no support on the whole city council. This new, the one that got elected 2 years ago with him, Elizabeth Connor, she's so tied into the whole continuum of care chronic homeless initiative that she doesn't even want to talk about having some kind of immediate alternative for this situation.
Elizabeth is a greenie, or?
No, she's a Democrat.
And
Ornelas claims to be green, but like I say, he's not.
Didn't you have a third Green Party member at one time?
Yeah, Connie Stewart was green when she got elected the first time. But then she switched to the Democratic Party, and she's not going to run again this year. She's going to go work for Patty Berg, the state assemblywoman.
So I understand you had a particularly nasty police officer up there, or Ranger Nick Selders?
Nick Selders is the one that's running point man on the streets right now. He's he's been handed down the duty of eliminating homeless people. They don't want to see us, and so they ticket us and try to run us off. And he's been fairly effective.
And what kind of tickets does he give? What kinds of things does he do?
Just general harassment tickets, you know. If you live your life in public and, you can be downtown on a Friday night, and if you're homeless, they'll arrest you for drunk in public because you've had a few beers. If you live in a house, you can come stagger out of the bar, start a big fight, and they'll just blame it on the homeless in the press the next day.
Do dogs have a particular place in this equation?
No, this is a very dog-unfriendly town. There's ordinances about dogs. They put the local, I keep calling it the soup kitchen, it's called the Arcata Endeavor. It's where they give a free meal, showers, resources that homeless people use. Well, they put it inside this no-dog area, knowing that homeless people with dogs have no other choice. They can't have a camp, so there's no place to leave their dog, but they can't have it there, so there's no way to access the resources, and it creates a problem, and many, many, many kids get ticketed.
How about Food Not Bombs? Are they an alternative for food for people in Arcata?
But they feed in the same place. I mean, they feed inside this little designated no-dog area.
Why would they do that? I mean, I understand why a more conservative group like Food Endeavor might, but why does Food Not Bombs do that?
Well, it's kind of like Pacific Avenue. It's a place that you can reach, do the most outreach to the most kids. You know, when you go to the city square in Arcata, that's where you'll find the most hungry people.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and that happens regularly, Food Not Bombs serves up there?
Yes, in the square.
Like twice a week, or?
They have been twice a week. Sometimes, when the kids get more kids come into town, they sometimes do it two or three times a week.
Now, I understand you've opened up a new Homeless Coalition office at 632 9th Street in Arcata.
If that's the right address.
That's what I was told. I'm reading it from my notes from talking with Roger.
The gray building across from the police department. I mean, from the fire department. You'll notice it.
You're surveilling the police from your Homeless Coalition office, eh?
I survey the police every time I see them.
What's the impact of that coalition office so far?
Well, it's really a little early to tell. We've definitely got the courts taking notice of it. Anytime anybody in this county now walks into that courtroom with more than one subpoena in their hand, they immediately run through some kind of fire drill. So, you know, the courts are beginning to notice it, and hopefully it'll be a spot that we can make dialogue with the city and the county from.
How's your court record in terms of the number of cases you've taken to court, the number of cases you've won, the number of cases dropped, that sort of thing?
Oh, we're probably pushing about 50-50 now. We've run into the problem with people that are, though they're not slow people as such, they're just very slow as far as the legal system comes. They don't understand exactly what their rights are. They don't understand exactly how the courts work. So when they get in there and they have a police officer that they're afraid of anyway because he's hunting them down, prosecuting them, and a judge in there who doesn't really want to hear this case, and he thinks these people should just pay these tickets and not be in there, they get overwhelmed. So we're losing a few because, well, they're just not lawyers. But I still think we're making the point to the judges. The judges are seeing the same officers in the same cases over and over and over again, and they're going to be able to put it together with the people that do get their cases out.
Now, you mentioned one of, at least I guess Roger mentioned a tactic that you've been using, which is to require police officers to show up by subpoenaing them, and then finally forcing the police to accept the subpoenas by having a person with a video camera present, observing them when they don't. You also have other tactics, I believe, that you've mentioned that you use, like disqualifying the infraction judge. We do that here. It's actually the referee, we call him. Used to be Mulligan. Now I believe it's Kim Baskett or Bassett. I'm not sure. She's recently been appointed down here in Santa Cruz. But in any case, disqualification is what you use as well?
Yeah, that, you know, these judges are appointed judges and they base their law on, you know, how old the police officer stopping you was and things like that. And when you sit in their courts and you watch them, they have no respect for the law. The law is not important. And when you're trying to make cases go through that may someday actually affect these laws that are in place, you want judges that base their decisions on the law, not on feel-good type decisions.
Right, or on the, you know, their ties with the police department or whatever.
Well, yeah, and they don't have any kind of, if an appointed judge does something wrong, he just gets unappointed. It's not like an elected judge. He has no, you really have no recourse to stop him from giving bad decisions. Mm-hmm. He's basically hired by the county to collect money as a traffic enforcement judge.
We're talking about the infraction judge that you disqualify, right?
Right. And I have a lot of confidence in these Humboldt County jobs, having been, you know, involved with things like forest defense and different type of activist cases that have gone through the courts up here.
Uh-huh. Do homeless people on the street say to you much as, I guess, not a lot of them, but some say to me, although more actually getting more positive, but you occasionally hear down here in Santa Cruz, oh, you're just drawing more heat down on us. Why don't you just keep a low profile and hide out like everyone else?
Well, if you really pin them down to it, they'll admit that, no, that's not the truth. You know, and most of these people that say that are on probation, and the reason they're on probation is because they did something silly, like they drank in the place they live, which is in public. And so now they're on this probation, and they have these police that know they're on probation just waiting to catch them drink one beer or waiting to catch them smoke one bowl or waiting to do, you know, for them to just mess up in the day-to-day things that people do to live, and so they can throw them back in jail. And it doesn't matter if we try to stop them or not. They're still going to end up back in jail because that's the point of the system is to be able to clean up Santa Cruz or clean up Arcata at the drop of a hat just by rounding everybody up and putting them in jail.
Now, you've been down to Santa Cruz, have you?
Oh, yeah.
And have you had any experience with the Santa Cruz police?
No, it usually takes them a while to start messing with me. I'm not a very outspoken, I don't go out at night much.
Uh-huh.
So it usually takes the police a while before they even realize I'm a homeless person.
Yeah, I mean, I know that I haven't observed the police as behaving as aggressively down here as you and Roger described them as behaving up in Arcata. Actually going out of their way to find specific homeless people, targeting them, waiting at the food services to get them for warrants or probation violations. I mean, that does happen here, but it seems to happen sort of incidentally, and I feel cruelly and inappropriately, but not as part of a systematic, intense targeting effort specifically. But up in Arcata, you have a more intense situation?
Oh, yes. It is the city's request to the police department to end illegal camping. Now, there's no such thing as legal camping, so that just basically means run the homeless people out of town.
And how do you know that's a specific mandate from
it's the city goals?
And what document is it mentioned?
The city plan.
And what do you have the wording of that city plan?
No, I don't have that.
Get it to me if you can, because
yeah.
I would really like to read it. That sounds like the basis for a constitutional challenge to their policy, because if there is no shelter for the people that they're running away, that's a violation of the right to travel, for one thing.
Right.
And it also probably violates certain basic other rights.
Well, if you, the Toby versus Santa Ana case went
Tobe
through.
Case, yeah.
Right, and I mean, they left room in the decision, the consenting decision said that these could be on an as-applied.
Right, the necessity defense.
Right,
and
well,
indeed,
it's not really the necessity defense, it's as-applied. If the Arcata Police Department are targeting homeless people, then that's as-applied, and we can get the law struck down.
So,
but the evidence-gathering part of that is very, very, very time-consuming and takes a long time.
Are you, in fact, engaged in that process?
We're trying to keep as close of records as we can. We're trying to get people to fill out the National Homeless Coalition survey sheets on police encounters, and we're trying to keep track of the tickets and who are issuing the tickets. And, you know, we have a few cases where the cops have actually told people, we're going to run you out of town. And
And local radio station have any sympathy for what you're doing?
We haven't got hooked up yet. We're hoping to this next year.
Do you have a free radio station in Arcata?
Well, we have one in Garberville. Our community radio station comes out of the town of Garberville, and I'm sure they could hook me up. But being homeless and being an 80-mile trip...
It's a ways.
Yeah, it's a ways. But
and is this a pirate radio station or just a community radio station?
No, there is a pirate radio station, but I just can't get hooked up with them. I've tried every avenue I can and begged people to get them hooked up with me, but I just haven't been hooked up yet. We do have a community television station, though, and I think I found someone to sponsor me to be a production member, which will give us access to equipment and airtime.
Well, I know that Cliff of Sacramento's Homeless Organizing Committee, SHOC, as they call themselves, is working on acquiring video skills in Sacramento to try to do that kind of documentation there and put that kind of stuff on the air. You are also, have you done much writing on this issue? What about local print media? How are they treating the homeless?
I have the local newspaper. We have a small town paper. They've kind of got a love-hate relationship with me that, you know, he wants to taunt me into writing specific articles, but he won't publish my general or articles that are on other subjects, you know.
Sounds like a hate-hate relationship.
Yeah, it is basically a hate-hate. He absolutely doesn't like homeless people, believes that they've ruined the world, that, you know, for 10,000 years everything was fine until homeless people all of a sudden showed up.
Well, that's actually a well-known fact, right?
Right. But he's actually does me a lot of favors sometimes just by being writing articles against me.
Now, the AC, oh, really? How does that a favor?
Well, because Arcata is really, really heavily laden with Green Party members and activists. And then when the activists read this newspaper guy coming out with all these blatant lies about me, then it makes can stop and think, well, you know, maybe the things he's saying about homeless people in general are blatant lies, too, and then they begin to look the situation.
You're talking about the Arcata Eye, right?
Right.
Which is on the Internet. I'm surprised because the earlier articles I read about you this summer seemed to be fairly positive.
Oh, yeah. There's a couple of people that write for his paper that have really been kind of positive to us. You know, Terry McDaniels is the one right now Terrence McNally, and he writes good, very, I think, neutral articles on us. But Kevin Hoover himself, the editor and owner of the paper, he doesn't much like us, and he writes very inflammatory and derogatory articles.
Hmm. Well, I know that I've suggested, and I suggest this to my Santa Cruz listeners, too, that if you have stories you want to write, you also get them to Street Spirit, the monthly newspaper that's sold by homeless people, well, throughout the state, but particularly in Northern California as an income source. Certainly not as a living, that's for sure, but, you know, kind of way of an alternative to panhandling. They're out of, if you're in Santa Cruz and you want to write for Street Spirit, give a call to the Huff line at 423-HUFF. We're on the air talking with Tad. You got a last name you want to give us, Tad? Or?
No, I don't have a last name.
Man without a last, Tad. We'll just call you
I've
Tad.
I've got all kinds of AKAs, of course, used, but I don't, myself, I'm just Tad.
You're just Tad, okay.
Right.
And Roger Herrick up there, as I lose my voice on this Christmas night. I got the impression, I got a really positive feeling after talking with Roger a few days ago and scheduling this interview that your recent opening of this Homeless Coalition HQ, which I guess you had another office, it was kind of a little further removed on the second floor in the middle of kind of unsympathetic office people. Now you're in a better place, and you're actually getting more street traffic, and you're actually observing instances of police harassment and going out there and your mere presence is stopping them. You're getting more kind of and more volunteers. Is that accurate?
Well, that's been the initial reaction, and hopefully that'll carry on. We really have to wait. I mean, everything gets hectic around the holidays. We have somebody going to trial tomorrow morning and somebody going to trial both Monday morning and Monday afternoon. So we're going to be kind of hectic till the first of the year. But then hopefully we can calm down and do some more organizing. We want to have a general Houseless Coalition meeting and see if we can get more people on. We want to do a voter registration drive. You know, our contention is let's make these votes count in the local elections, and we'll change it from here.
Mm-hmm. What are these trials in the next couple of days?
Let's see. We have a open container. One of the things the police do up here, Nick Selders is really famous for it, is they'll see one person in a group violate a law and then come give everybody in the group tickets. And we have a brother going to court tomorrow that situation happened to him. You know, there's 6-7 people sitting in a circle. One person has a can of beer. 7 people get open container tickets.
It's sort of a collective punishment, eh?
Well, it's their theory is that, you know, these kids won't pay these tickets, and then, you know, another 2 months down the road, they can just pick them up on a warrant. And that's failure to appear, which is a misdemeanor, which they get in there, and the public defender says, well, you want to get out of jail, plead guilty. They plead guilty. The judge says something like, you're on irrevocable conditional release, and they're like, cool, I'm out of here. And then they find out, you know, 2 months later, they're on probation.
And the significance of being on probation, of course, as most people here probably know, is that if you are on probation and you are charged with something else, even such a thing as contact with the police, you can, by a much reduced standard, not guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, but something like preponderance of the evidence, be returned to jail for the remainder of the sentence that you have been sentenced to, and that can be done without a jury trial.
That's correct.
So it's a pretty dangerous situation to be in if you're an activist. Are you on probation yourself?
Oh, no. No, I don't do probation.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, I'll spend the rest of my life in jail before I'll do a day probation.
So are you facing any charges yourself, Ted?
No, they don't seem to want to file on me. I did get a ticket for having my dog parked downtown, which I hope they go after.
Uh-huh. So do you have a court date for that one?
No, I still haven't been able to get that one arraigned. They don't arraign them on a very timely basis here, which is another thing that we're doing with some of these cases is we're filing what's called a CERNA motion,
mm-hmm.
which is your right to a speedy trial.
What's the motion called?
A CERNA.
A CERNA.
S-E-R-C-E-R-N-A. It's a Cerna motion, and it's a right to a speedy trial. But our contention is that if you give me a ticket today and you don't put it through the system for 3, 4, 6 months, a year, then any of my witnesses, which are homeless people that the police department are trying to make transient, might be gone. And they're perishable witnesses.
Sounds like a more like a basically a true fact rather than a theory. I mean,
well, yeah, it is. But that's, I mean, you have to hit these courts with, look, this is what's happening. This is why this is unconstitutional. And it's unconstitutional in the fact that by delaying your trial, you, the only witness you end up having with it when your trial finally comes around, is the police officer. And everybody knows that if it's the police officer against the homeless person, the police officer wins, regardless of what kind of great person the homeless person is.
Now, what's the situation, you know, as far as homeless deaths this year in Arcata? How many people have died up there who are homeless that you're aware of?
Well, every once in a while you hear about one that you didn't know about. But as far as out in front, the paper doesn't report many homeless deaths as homeless people when they're in the paper.
Mm-hmm.